Thank you. So my name's Paul Gregg. I'm coming here today from Atlassian. Today I'm going to introduce a talk around scaling yourself, managing distributed teams, delivering reliable services. So what's my experience? I've been working for 10 plus years either in or leading SRE or SRE-like teams before the term was even being thrown around. I'm going to be sharing resources, tips, and my personal experiences surrounding the leadership of a distributed team. I want to help you understand the pains and the challenges that you can have with a distributed team, and hopefully learn from some of my experiences or apply the resources that I'll share with you today. So what does my distributed team look like today? It covers three geographies, it covers two services. Some of you might be familiar with those, they are Jira and Confluence. It covers two team leads, and in total, that is 18 site reliability engineers across those groups. But it wasn't always that big. It's been a rapid expansion, and when I first started, it was in Jira SRE. It was myself, two geographies, and five engineers. We've scaled up very, very rapidly, and there have been challenges that you face as part of a distributed team. That's what I'm hoping to share with you today. So let's go back one bit and understand what is a distributed team. There are many definitions, I think, that you can fall into. It could be as basic as a single worker that's just operating from their home office as part of your distributed team. The more common scenario that I've seen and that I've had experiences in working with are distributed teams where you have three to four people at a multiple site, usually at a two-site example. However, it can expand to your around-the-world type setup, and you could have four or five sites with multiple people sitting in all of those. Most of these tips that I'm applying today will work with that single worker in the home office, with the two geography example, or if you actually do that, have that five geography example, you could also apply it there. Just a quick show of hands, just to kind of gauge interest, how many of you are actually working in reliability teams that are distributed today? Awesome, all right, I've got the right people in the room. So, I'm sure many of you already understand some of these, but let's just recap why we usually pursue having a distributed team. So, first of all, you're only going to go for something if there's real big benefits in it. Big benefits that you typically see are coverage. That coverage, when you're looking after a service, means you have that broader span where you can look after and respond to that service. The next part is around talent. It's hard to hire great people. It takes time. If you've got a distributed model, you have the advantage of being able to cast that net even further, hit bigger markets of engineers and bring them in. There's also a flip side to this, and I've seen this more recently, in that you can actually use having a distributed team as an incentive for bringing people in, either within your own organization or from external. So my example is, we recently, for our Confluence team, moved a lot of the location from Sydney out into Mountain View. We also found that there was a lot of interest from engineers within the company and external that wanted to join because of where that location was, where we had had a previous trouble in hiring great engineers into maybe a Sydney location. We had a different challenge where we had too many people that were trying to get into the Mountain View office. This is a great problem to have and one of those advantages of using that distributed model. Co-location. Just another quick question to the room. How many of your SRE teams actually, or show of hands, of anyone whose SRE teams don't sit with their development teams? There are a few of you. Do you find that challenging? I know that I've been in that experience, and yes, it's challenging. It's difficult, you feel like you're not heard, co-location is one of the advantages of setting up a distributed model. It means that where your development teams go to, you can also follow them along with your SREs, and your SREs can be engaged with those development teams. They can develop quicker, they can understand the problems, they can work with those teams and make sure you're building reliable services together. The final benefit we sit at is better on call. On call is one of the, I guess, detractors that we have to deal with. It's, you know, incident response and being available to respond to those services. By introducing a distributed model into your SRE teams, you can reduce the amount of hours that each of those groups actually has to perform the on-call duties. That means you've got fresher engineers, you've got people that actually have a little bit more time to spend on that proactive element of their day, that they can make those services better, because it's not just 24/7, I am on call and trying to make sure that this service isn't burning to the ground. So they're the benefits. There's obviously some drawbacks, that's why I'm here today. I'm trying to show you how to address those, and they're these challenges. One that I see that just sticks out in all the teams that I've worked with in a distributed sense is friction. It's friction and that lack of cohesion that can start to develop when you have teams in different geographies or different sites, and there's a communication breakdown, and it might be verbal, non-verbal, it might be just absence of interaction, but there's that friction that starts to develop, and it's caused by that divide of having that distribution of team. The next one, which starts to feed from that friction, is duplication. The left hand cannot see what the right hand is doing. They have the best intentions, but if that communication is not very clear between those teams, you will start to see evidence of duplication. I'll give you an example. I have, unfortunately, been at the example of a demo being presented by both geographies at the same time, and realized when we're seeing the first demo that the second demo is actually probably going to achieve exactly the same outcome, even though it wasn't what we had planned that we were going to deliver, that it deviated, and we both built solutions to the same problems. That's disheartening, not just for yourself because you've tried to plan it, but it's disheartening for everyone that actually contributed to those two projects and put in their time and efforts to try and come up with those solutions, because now you've got two solutions to the same problem. Great for redundancy, but probably could have been more effective use of time. The other one is costs. So when I was talking about the distributed models before, you want to have at least a few engineers if you're going to use this distributed model for your on-call benefits. You're going to have teams that can rotate so that you can relieve them of those on-call duties occasionally, and they're not just constantly on-call, and that comes with a cost. So as part of having a distributed team, you are going to probably have a more expensive team in terms of headcount, and the other thing is there is going to be a higher expectation for the output of that team. What are they generating? What is the impact that they are having to that service, to the development org, to the rest of the company by being a bigger team? So that is definitely one of the challenges that you have. The final one that I see as the main challenge as well is imbalance. And this is one that didn't occur to me till early on. Oh, sorry, didn't occur to me early on, but was more as I started to visit sites after sites and started to get a better feel for it. It's when you have a distributed team, the day in the life of the engineers in that team can differ very greatly. And there are some metrics that can give you indication that this is occurring, but unless you are there on the ground and present and understanding it, this can go completely unnoticed. And if you don't notice something, you can't respond to it. So just being aware of these challenges is the first step for starting to be able to handle working with a distributed team. So, bit of a bold statement here, but it's the one that I ask myself quite regularly. of why am I here as a lead of this distributed group? And I'm there to inspire team collaboration that unleashes their potential. So let me just dive in a little bit on some of these words. When I talk about inspire, and it's a fantastic word, but it's I want to see a thirst from the engineers and the team to try and arrive at an outcome. I want them to be passionate about how they get there. I want them to see that those services are reliable and to have that pride that we are building fantastic services, not just us, but with our development organisations as well. When I talk about their potential, there's two items to this. There is your team and you want to see them realise their potential, but there's also each individual that belongs in that team. And you want to make sure that not only your team is successful, but each of those individuals develops in their career throughout that growth of the team. You are the success of the sum of parts. So we've gone over some of the benefits of having a distributed model. We've gone over what is a distributed model. Next, I'm going to go through three items. These are presence, planning, and balance. On each of these, I'm going to share some resources and then some examples or real-world experiences that I've had on each of them. I use presence, planning, and balance to try and attend to those challenges that we just went through before. So if you understand what the challenges are of a distributed model, you can use these tools, these resources, and these experiences to try and preempt them or to try and address them if they do occur. So presence, establishing trust. This is a huge one. When I first joined JIRA SRE, so the very early days that I was talking about before, before I even sat with the Sydney team in that office, I was on a plane over to Poland to sit with the remote team. Now, that was a 36-hour flight because A, it was done last minute, and B, I had no idea where I was going. I was completely unknown, completely had no idea of this team, and went over there. And I think that was fantastic because whilst I was over there, all I could do was ask. I couldn't tell them where they were, what they had to do. It was ask and understand. And while I was over there, we went through what had they done in the past? What did they think we needed to do as a team? And it was interesting because a lot of the planning and projects that had occurred for that team previously had been run out of Sydney. This team had never had that experience. They hadn't been the drivers of the planning. They hadn't been the drivers of the vision of where we were going. And by me being present, asking these questions and letting them actually guide where we went for that financial year in the project, we established a presence within the team. We understood each other, but we built trust. And when we have that foundation of trust, you can start to explore when the challenges of distribution are occurring. But if you try and jump to, okay, what are the problems, let's solve them, you're not going to get honest answers because they won't trust you. You don't have that shared understanding or appreciation between your groups. We go back to the title of this talk. It's about scaling yourself. Scaling yourself to manage these distributed teams. There's no way I could keep doing 36-hour flights every 2 or 3 months. I've got two little ones. I think my wife would definitely have something to say about that. But the other way is you've got teams over there, and you should be encouraging the growth of your teams through getting the travel to occur through the team members and bringing out the remote engineers to where your local site is or from your local site out to that remote site. You get your team maintaining and building upon that foundation of trust and presence through them actually continuing on with that travel. Yes, you still get to go there, and some of my fondest trips are still going over to Poland and eating pierogi and having a great time, but you get your team to carry on that tradition, to keep that going on. There is another way that everything doesn't have to be about travel. I would suggest travel at a very first starting point, but you can also look at how your shifts are organized. So one of the examples I had was once a week, I would cut down one of my days working in the office so that then I would go home, do dinner with the kids, put them to bed, and then jump online and do a 2 to 3 hour shift with my Poland office. And that would be sometimes one-on-ones. Other times, it would be around just being there to talk about what had happened in the Sydney office over the last week. Just to share, it wasn't telling someone to do something, it wasn't getting status updates, it was just, look, this is what I've experienced in the last week, and here's my attempt at trying to share with you what was the chatter around the office. That, again, just keeps maintaining and building that trust. We've also seen then that type of process work again. So I recently had a new lead that was hired out in Mountain View. A majority of his team was sitting in Sydney. Again, we'd already had this experience. I'd known that it had worked, and we used a similar model there. So it's, again, it's not always up to you to do it. Try and figure out where you can apply these learnings to other people. So we've talked about it, that, you know, getting presence and establishing trust. It's fantastic, but what do I do with it from here? So this is just one example. So earlier teams that I'd run, I'd done an exercise which is going through Tuckman's stages. I've included the resources at the very end of this talk, so you can go through those, and I've actually included the survey that you can do, so you can reuse it. You don't have to do it up for yourself. It's 33 questions that go through to try and understand the stage of a team, if it's either forming, if it's kind of hit a plateau, or there's also like an end state of when a team is breaking up or it's come to the end of its life. And then with all of those states of the team, there are certain challenges that they outline in Tuckman's that indicate how you can try and move to that next level. So I've got presence with my JIRA team back in that time frame. So I thought this is a great time to whip out this survey, share it with everyone. Now, here's one of the caps, like the gotchas that you can have with a distributed team. They're not going to be able to respond straight away. Set reasonable expectations and allow time for people to actually contribute and think about these things. There is a time difference, there is a gap. So you give them time to actually consider and participate in all of these items. It can be very easy just to think about where you are locally, like, oh, yes, we can get this done today. But remember, there's 2 or 3 other teams that also need to come in, may have a completely disrupted day. We work in a disruptive sort of world. You have to allow them some time. On the flip side of that, you need to set expectations for when you want to be able to, you know, wrap that up. So make it clear to the teams what you're expecting. So we ran the survey, and within 3 days, 100% responses back. Awesome. All right, cool. So everyone's actually engaged. My measure that I had established presence and trust in the team was a good one. We're on the right path, which is good. So next, I usually go back to things that I'm familiar with. Running incidents and being an incident manager, one of the parts of that, and like Kurt talked about before, is around that root cause analysis. You know, in very early days, actually just watching that last talk, I could actually see myself going through those different steps. We began very much in around the 5 whys type concept, whereas today it's more we repeat these processes. And now we try and understand some actions, how we can evolve and keep improving our systems. But I wanted to apply this to the results of this survey. I knew where this team was. I was planning on rerunning this constantly to understand the challenges of distribution. And I wanted to use that root cause analysis to try and understand where was the pain point. And the thing that came out through posting a page and pointing out to the team, this is kind of where we sit, and I'd like to understand how you think we could get to the next level. And the big stories that came out from different members of the team, and everyone was open and sharing around it, was when we catch up as a team, it's because we have a meeting. That's it. We go in there, we catch up once a week for the team meeting and the demos, and there's an agenda. And that's what we talk about. They're like, but we see these teams that we sit next to that go and have social events together or games nights and things like that. We don't feel like we have that go sit up in the lunchroom together type feeling. Okay, so we know we've got one of these problems, one of these challenges. We go back to that those early slides. The challenge is that cohesion. The team didn't feel the cohesion. So, what was the solution? Well, in this case, it was a video game. I don't know if anyone's familiar with this. It's called Keep Talking and No One Explodes. Online game, and you have a bomb diffuser that owns the laptop. Everyone else in the room has a diffuser's guide, and they assist the person with the laptop as working through each of these modules. It's on a timer, and obviously the timer runs out. If you haven't successfully disarmed your modules, kaboom, that's it, on to the next person. There is one fun, interesting element of this as well. This is fantastic for training incident managers. If you want an incident manager to actually have fun while they're learning to work in an incident, man, this can be the best way. There's not something that's on fire. They actually enjoy it, and they get to figure out how to communicate and pull the right information from people as you need it in a time-critical situation. All right, so the team selected, they proposed this idea of this games night. We found a medium that we could do that would allow the distributed teams to work. We set it up. It was a Friday evening in Sydney. We covered the Gdansk office shift in the morning. They came in early, all psyched up for it. And the complete day, night was a disaster. VC didn't work. They have different versions of the bomb manual, which I found out afterwards, and we had different versions that everyone was trying to use. We set ourselves up for failure there. There was just thing after thing that went wrong. And at the time, I'm sitting there and a little bit disappointed. I'd had such great hopes for it. But then as I stopped and I watched the team interacting, they were working together the whole time to try and make sure that it, A, we got to do what we wanted to do, or that we were just having a fun and laugh about that we had an entire group of our SRE teams here and we couldn't even get an online game working between us. It was really a good moment of building that cohesion. It wasn't a meeting agenda. It was just an honest, nice experience for the team to bond together. So what we did there was we established presence. And then from that presence, we explored what could be some of the challenges that we had as a distributed team. And we used that information to then work with the team and understand how can we try and address that. I'm not saying video games are always the solutions for these, but just go through that process and don't make it a one-time thing. Like, you keep going through. The games nights still do occur. They're a little less frequent now, but there are always new experimentations that the teams are trying to keep building that cohesion. So that is talking about presence. The next item I'm going to talk about is planning. And planning, from my perspective, has two facets. It's both the planning for the people in your team, and it's also the planning of the projects. Now, being in a distributed SRE team, or any SRE team, you have an element of reactive time, that detracts from your ability to work on projects and that proactive element. That means you have to, as the leader of those teams, be aware and strong in planning so that the time that you do have is impactful. The engineers within your group feel that they are working on the most important thing and the success of what they're working on can be measured and shown to not only themselves, the rest of the team, their peers, but people throughout the entire company, and most importantly, for us with our services, the customers that are using them as well, we want them to see that we've got reliable services and have a great time. So let me tell you a story around an example that I had, which has both the planning from a personal person's career and also around the project front. So I had some time that was taken off. I had my second child arriving, and I had one member in my team that I had been through one-on-ones and just general discussions. He had indicated that he'd wanted to go to a leadership track. And that was before my leave had come along and all of that planning. So I understood that there was someone in my team that was looking for that opportunity. I was aware of that. Now, what can happen here, and I'll just bring this out, is one of those challenges from being a distributed team is whilst this was someone that was in my local group, I had explored this opportunity with both the local team and what was typically the remote team on this group. I understood everyone in that group and what they aspired to in their careers. There were originally two people that were wanting to go for it, but it was the one that was actually local that really wanted to try it at that time. And that's why we went through that. But be aware that you have to keep thinking and you have to push yourself to think, okay, I'm paying attention to the people that I see every day. How can I make sure I'm paying that same level of attention to the team that are over there and their personal development? So the person in this team, let's call him Adam because that's what his name is, jumped in and was going to lead the group for a... It was a, ended up being a three-month period, so one quarter. What was great to see is that through the application of this presence, planning, and balance, people within the team were picking up these skills as well. They were following on from seeing how I responded, how I tried to establish presence, how I went around planning, that they also tried to emulate or try different approaches, but trying to establish those same goals. What we saw with Adam was we set the challenge. The challenge was, as a distributed team, we need to see impact from having a bigger SRE team in comparison to a lot of other groups. So we talked about one of the distribution challenges is showing that cost, you know, you have that risk of cost, and you want to show that impact. At the time, Adam did worked with the team, asked them, how can we do things better? They looked at the projects they worked on. They tried to do one single monolithic project together. This had problems. You had to do handovers between each of the regions whilst you were working on certain items. When you have pull requests, there were sometimes delays on the remote office, or the remote office might have had a question that they wanted to ask into Sydney. We had to wait for Sydney to come online, they would respond, and then you've lost a day. And then slowly but slowly, the velocity of these big projects started to slow down. So Adam's there leading the team. He understands what the problem is, works with the team, and together they all come up with the idea, how about we separate projects? And that can work. But he also remembers, hang on, we've just spent so much time trying to establish cohesion and now we're going to go and separate projects. Isn't that kind of not working together and keeping that presence? How are we going to maintain presence? So instead of adding something new, he thought about, let's use an existing item that we have. We have the retrospectives that we used to run with each of our sprints, they were two-week sprints that we were running. How about we make a rule? We can have separate projects that work either together as a single theme or even as a separate theme, but just one rule that we're going to have. Each team at the end of that sprint has to provide a demo So each region is demoing to each other, whether we finished or not, where we were at the end of that sprint. This is great. This went on for, it got implemented at the start of the quarter. By the end of the quarter, they had improved the velocity of the projects that they were outputting. The team understood the projects and the work that they were doing in each of the other regions, not only just their own projects. And Adam had been successful in A, his personal development, in being able to lead the team and bring them together and to get them to realise the problems of distribution and address one of those challenges, but also in making sure that the group themselves had a broader impact to the service they were looking after and to the broader Atlassian group. So, just going on from that, one of the important traits or set of important traits that can help you be a really good leader when you're talking about planning or working in planning, and this is for individuals and projects, are listen, ask, and tell. Sounds very simple, but you have to put a slight twist on these when you're working with distributed teams. Let's start with listen. With listen, it can't be about creating more meetings just so you can hear what's going on. I've done it before, and I got corrected on it very early. No one likes more meetings. It doesn't achieve anything, as well as the agenda can be set out. You have to be creative. You have to think outside the box a little bit. Some of the ways that I find that I can do passive listening is watching what's happening on our instant messenger channels and just seeing, is there a little bit of friction going on? Are the pull requests that are going on between team members getting to that nitpicky point? Is there actually a positive outcome of what's being achieved, or is it just a bubbling tension? You've got to listen and try and pick up on these items so that you can attend to them. Again, if you know what the challenges are of a distributed model, you can be alert and try and listen for them, but it's not just with your ears. Now, ask. I think I've had quite a few of my examples so far that it's around me asking the team, how do we get somewhere? How can we do this? Where do we think we should be focusing our attention? So, you are working in trying to get interaction from remote groups, you should try and think of how can I allow the people in those remote teams the time to consider them. There's two resources that, again, are linked in the page that I've got at the end of this presentation. But the first of those is a DAISY acronym. It's a four-letter acronym rather than the three. But that is a driver, an approver, contributors, and informed parties. The idea here is you're driving towards a decision, and what you want to provide everyone is background and the options that you're asking them to consider as part of this decision. You ask you're letting your informed parties know the direction you're going. Your contributors, you're asking them to help build up the case or to agree or disagree with the options that you've proposed in there. You've got the driver, which is typically if it's your idea and you want that decision, you're the driver. And then your approvers may be if you've got your organisational structure, if it's going to have an impact, is to make sure that the right people are agreeable to that outcome and are aware of it. Using a resource like a DAISY means you can create that artifact and then you can push that out there and set a date that you want to have it considered by, but allow all of that, the distributed teams, to contribute and to build upon it. It's more than we had a stand-up, we had a problem, we talked about how we were going to solve it, and we just decided on the spot that's how we're going to solve it, and then we'll tell the other team tonight when we do handover that that's going to create the friction and that lack of cohesion that we talked about before. It's going to take more time, and it's going to mean that you, as the leader of this distributed team, have to allow and plan better so that you can get the responses that you want. But it's You have to do it. It's the only way to make sure that you are going to have everyone engaged rather than being told. So hang on, I just told you not to tell people things, and I've got that as one of the most important traits on here that you want to do. So when you're telling your team something, I reserve telling for outlining what the vision is of our group, of clarifying what the vision is of our company. And the important part that can very easily get missed, how our vision aligns to that broader vision, how what you're going to do on this project helps us reach our goal, and how that goal links into the broader goals that we have as a company. This is what you should reserve telling for. Telling's not go do this, go do that. It's I'm telling you how we're going to be successful and why we're on the right path and why we are dedicating all of our efforts towards these channels. So presence, planning, one more left, balance. Keeping work-life balance is hard. It's even harder when you pack in regular travel, on-call rosters, big incidents that are going on for maybe multiple days, long commutes, families, friends, partner commitments. It's something I have struggled with at times. But I found by introducing something extra on top of all of that, you can actually help establish balance. So let me tell you a story about how I found my thing. Talked about where we had our second child come along. I spent some time at home. I realized I was massively unfit at the time, and decided that whilst my wife was bonding with our newborn, I would take my two-year-old daughter at the time out, and I would learn to run. I'd never run in my life. I used a couch to 5K program. I don't know if any of you have ever tried that, but the idea is I'm someone that sits on the couch and watches TV, and by the end of it, I'm going to be able to run 5Ks without stopping. I thought, sounds possible. Why not try and do it with a pram as well? So did it with the pram and did that program whilst I had my time off. Great bonding with my eldest daughter. Little high fives along the way, great fun. Then I went back to work. I'd been so relaxed and so connected when I'd had all that time at home. And I found when I was back at work, it'd get to lunchtime, I was like, I need to go out for a run. Or I've just come out of back-to-back meetings. I need to go out for a run. And it didn't quite trigger to me. But when I was coming back from that, I was making sharper decisions. I was making more decisions. I was also being more aware of, hang on, if this is the impact it's having on me when I'm getting stressed and I don't have that extra balance that's in there, what must that be doing as well to my team when they've just had, one of those crazy hairy nights where you get paged 3 or 4 times and then you haven't had time to do someone else to cover your shift and you've got to be in there at 8 a.m. And it's like, you start to become more attuned to, we talk about balance, but you need someone looking out for you the whole time so that they can call you in and say, are you making sure you are keeping your balance? When you're working with a distributed team, it becomes even harder because you can't, and this is what I was talking about before, you can't see them maybe coming in and looking stressed or bags under the eyes. You have to pick it up through little triggers that someone might be a little bit shorter than usual in their conversations, or their interactions, they might just be non-existent. They may just detach themselves completely as a sign of exhaustion. So the idea here is maintain balance for yourself, but also be aware that the rest of your team, that team is only going to keep being successful if you make sure that they also are paying attention to their balance that they're establishing. So just a quick one. So it says from 1 to 100. So when I was able to do, started off as 1K, as of about 2 weeks ago, I lined up for my first ultra marathon, which is 100Ks through the Blue Mountains. I nearly got to the end. 91.2Ks, if anyone wants to talk about what went wrong for those last 8Ks, I'm happy to talk about it later. But it was, again, it's one of these things that you keep, and I think Kurt discussed it in his last talk, it's like you keep building upon these things. So I found something that was my balance, but I keep building upon it, and I wanted to make it more challenging, but still that I was getting the rewards from it. Try and go in with that focus as to how can I keep evolving things that I work with and making them better. How can I make presence better in our teams? How can I make the planning better in our teams? How can I make my balance and the balance of my teams better? And how can we use it to find those challenges of being distributed? So just in quick takeaway form, hopefully I've still got all of you here in the room, presence. You're trying to establish presence. You want it to be physical and virtual. Physical is where we're talking. Catch a plane over there. Go and meet the team. Spend some time. See what it's like in their offices. And virtual, in that try and set up those games nights or interactions so that you can maintain that presence and that trust that you've established with your teams. Planning. We talked about planning. It's got two aspects. It's not just projects. It's around your people as well. We talked about listen, ask, and tell, and how you put a little switch on those because you're working with distributed teams. And finally, balance. One of the ways I like to look at balance is around head, heart, and hands. So head being the mental, hands being the physical, and heart being the emotional. If you can try and get that balance constantly throughout your life and throughout your teams, you will find that they will be more receptive to those presence and those planning opportunities. So thank you so much for all of your time today and for everyone that's contributed around this conference. It's been great talking to all of you. Up there with both the Google short link and the QR code, that just goes through to a Google group, and it's got a post in the top of that group that has all the resources that I've discussed today. There's a few little goodies, like I said, there's the Tuckman stages. I've already created it as a Google form, so you can just copy it and send it out or try it with your teams if you want. And a few articles that I used as reference or that I've come along whilst I've been building this talk out. So with that, that's the end of the talk, but I'm happy to take any questions that anyone may have.